Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 19 of a year-long conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about blue states and red state swap positions, and we have a ton of political news for you. Let me bring out Blue and Alabama's Michael. Michael, can you believe that we're at episode 19 already?
19. Turned legal during the last podcast. This is that weird number that nothing really happened.
We're old enough that the Donald Trump campaign can have its way with us, but we're not quite old enough yet to have a drink with Hillary. I'm caught in between ages, really.
It's terrible.
But it's actually a wonderful time to be an American because our long national nightmare is over, and by that I mean the Ted Cruz campaign. Long-time listeners that have been listening to this, I'm sure they were probably anticipating that I was dancing on cloud nine. I mean, I was pretty much having the best day of my life when he was forced out of the race. Honestly, I was thrilled that he quit, but I was surprised. Like, I really didn't think he was going to quit until the convention.
I got the notification about it, and I was blown away by it. I was listening to CNN on the way home on the radio, and they had one of his advisors on, and they were like, "If Cruz loses Indiana, is he going to call it quits?" And he's like, "No, we're taking it to June 7th. We're taking it all the way." You know, all of a sudden, Cruz's top aide hinting that Cruz will be withdrawing from the race, and he comes out and says it, and I'm just shocked by it.
Well, you know, lying Ted, he can't even keep when he's going to exit the race straight. I mean, he's
exactly
like the guy's out on CNN, and he's like, "No, we're in it to June the 3rd. And then his earpiece, it goes, "We quit." He goes, "I mean, we quit. I'm sorry."
I guess the best part about it, though, is not completely quitting. He's just suspending, so he can still raise some money.
We've talked about this on the podcast a little bit. We've talked about it a lot off the podcast in private, but even when somebody quits, they're not really quit because their super PAC keeps going. And I know last year, like Rick Perry and Scott Walker, they quit, but their super PACs kept going for another couple of months. And I thought, isn't that the perfect, like, analogy for Rick Perry? Like, the guy's literally brain dead. Like, he's out of the race, and his super PAC keeps going. But it's your best bullet. What do we need the candidate for? We can still campaign. So I think with Ted Cruz, it's the same thing to where, yeah, he's out of the race, but he's going to keep raising money. And, I mean, it feels like these super PACs and these campaigns, they keep going whether they have a candidate or not, which this is just bizarre. This primary, we've talked about it. It's been going on for about 15 years now. I mean, this primary is just never ending. This is the longest campaign in, I believe, human history. Like, I don't believe there's ever been a race this long. But I thought, even when people are out, they're not out. And Ted Cruz is like, "I quit." And this campaign's like, "We still believe in you, Ted. The campaign's going on with or without you."
Yeah.
And it just feels like it's never going to be over. Like, Trump and Hillary are going to be the nominees, and you're going to have Rubio's super PAC still skipping up money. And then even after Hillary wins, like, it'll be December, and Hillary's already won the race. And Bernie will still be in a Burger King parking lot. "We're one state away from winning this thing." I mean, I just feel like even when they lost, they're not going to quit. Like, they're just going to keep. Like, Bernie, I feel like Bernie could die. He could drop dead, and his campaign would still be like, "Give Bernie's ghost $5. His ghost is going to lead the revolution. His ghost is going to haunt corporate America." And it shows a mock-up of Bernie in like the Goldman Sachs boardroom, and he's like, "You billionaire class, I'm going to get you." And he's Jacob Marley and Scrooge. On the one hand, I'm thrilled that we do have our nominees. It's definitely going to be Hillary and Trump. But I still read articles, and I still see the commentators being like, "Not so fast." And I'm just like, is it ever going to be over?
Yeah, I say the same thing. It's like, Bernie's won Indiana, so.
Well, Hillary has lost almost every state that doesn't border the coastline. I've written pieces about Trump and Hillary. They have a real problem with coastless America, and it still doesn't matter. You could lose every state in the Midwest and still win in a landslide, and it really doesn't matter for either one of them. It's kind of funny, too, that, like, Trump and Hillary both are really not popular in the Midwest, and it's going to be kind of funny if they just protest and don't vote in November. Like, they just, you know, like, if there's a third party, like, they write in Bernie, or they write in a third party, like, Pat Buchanan gets in there as a third party candidate and he wins. And what do you think the Midwest will do? Will they just, like, protest and write in a third party? Or, I mean, like, they really do not seem to like Trump or Hillary.
Either that, or they're just going to stay at home. I think you can see where voters turn out in those states. I think you'll see record turnout in a lot of big states, but I think you'll see really low turnout.
I think you're right. I think we're going to see a high voter turnout in the South. I think because Hillary definitely has her fans in the South, and Trump definitely has his people. I mean, you might see states like Georgia become somewhat competitive, and you'll see high turnout on both sides. I think they'll both get a lot of votes in the West Coast and the Northeast, a lot of Hillary turnout, and I think in the South you're going to see it be really high turnout on both sides, but I think in the Midwest, I think you're right. I think that says more about them than the candidates. But we can kind of gloat a little bit, because people all the time give a shit. Alabama, Alabama. And I haven't lived in Alabama. And even in New York and California, people, Alabama. They laugh, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like the state motto should be Alabama. Not as bad as you think. It's we can kind of gloat a little bit because I do think that the Southeast is economically growing a little bit. And even despite these horrible transgender laws and these anti-gay laws, despite these terrible setbacks from the legislature, I think the governments are becoming really conservative, but the populations themselves are really becoming more moderate. And I think the Midwest, I don't think the populations are becoming more moderate at all. And I think you're seeing the populations themselves.
I think you're right.
And they're kind of pining for this lost age of the Bernies and the Ted Cruzes. I mean, when you hear people in the Midwest talk about what they hate about Trump, it's his style. They agree with all his rhetoric. They agree with all this anti-Mexican, anti-Muslim. They agree with all that. And people think that they don't. That's why they're voting for Ted. Ted's the same as Trump, if not worse. I mean, Ted's actually more transphobic and more homophobic. In Indiana, Ted ran an entire campaign about those transgender bathroom laws, which was like, we're about to really get into this. This is an exciting episode. We've been wanting to talk about this for a long time. But one thing red states are just dead wrong about is this, like, anti-gay kick that they're on. I mean, they're really, like, embraced this message of, like, that now that they've lost the battle on gay marriage, they seem like they want to fight it. You're fighting it harder now than you did 10 years ago when you had a chance. I mean, North Carolina, they passed that transgender people can't use a certain bathroom. And I'm like, how many transgender people really are in North Carolina? 50. I mean, like, how many people does this really apply to?
Well, you know, Oxford, Alabama basically passed the same thing.
I don't even know where that is. But, I mean, when you're talking about, like, how many people do you think this really affects for all the harm that it does to a state? Because, I mean, North Carolina, they're talking about, like, they're going to lose, like, movie and TV production. There's a lot of it in North Carolina. They're talking about leaving and going somewhere else. And a lot of corporations are talking about leaving. Georgia, it almost cost them a lot. And I'm like, for all the economic harm that it's doing in North Carolina, it feels like it's just purely symbolic. And even though it's doing real economic harm to a state.
And that's what I was saying about off. They host the Ohio Valley Conference softball tournament, or they're hosting it this year. Pretty big moneymaker Division II tournament, but all of the coaches pulled out. They're moving the tournament somewhere else because of the law in Oxford. That's still money that they're missing out on. Hotels, restaurants, stores.
Right. Well, are you surprised that it seems like sports are on the side of the progressives? Because, like, the coaches and the teams, they're pulling out of that tournament. I mean, I think that Oxford probably thought, oh, they'll be for this, and they're not.
Yeah.
And I think in Georgia, what really made the governor of Georgia say, I'm not going to do this, it wasn't even the TV and film production who threatened to leave, although that's billions of dollars. It was the Super Bowl, because I think Atlanta's scheduled to host the Super Bowl in 2020 or 2021, and they said, we're not going to host it there if you have this law. I'm thinking, like, it's so funny that, like, the sports leagues, I mean, the NFL is basically on the side of the progressives, and I think that it shows you how much it's changed. It shows you, like, how much public is just not for this anymore. They're just not on the side of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people have really gotten wise to this. To, like, this is just one of those wag the dog scenarios where in North Carolina, that governor's fucked up so bad that he needs something to distract people, and they bring out this transgender boogeyman to do it.
Yeah, that could be it. Most people, regardless, when you look at the people as a whole, we're getting a little more and more accepting, more moderate, but the lawmakers are not following what the electorate is wanting.
Yeah. I think whenever you look at states that are doing this, it's almost always a state, their legislature has completely fucked up the economy with Reaganomics and trickle-down economics, and they need a smoke screen. Like, they need, because if you're spending all this time talking about North Carolina's transgender laws, you're not talking about, like, having a budget deficit, or you're not talking about them trying to squash unions, or you're not, I mean, as much as people have talked about, we're going to boycott North Carolina and Georgia, I didn't hear anybody say that when North Carolina's governor turned down the Medicaid package. Boycott over that. Well, that was nowhere.
Well,
I think socially liberal issues are being used as, like, you know, like, look over here so that you don't see, like, the economic liberal stuff that's really going on. And I think it's all just, like, a circus, really.
Yeah, I think so. And the ironic part about all of this is talking about how voters are wanting one thing and lawmakers are doing something that they disagree with. And that's exactly how we ended up with Donald Trump as the nominee. Our voters are tired of federal lawmakers doing things that they don't agree with. And they're basically kicking out the establishment and putting in a guy like Trump. But yet, on a state level, you have state legislatures passing laws that the public pretty much as a whole doesn't want. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. of November.
I mean, speaking about Ted Cruz, I mean, I'm so happy that he's gone out of this race. I thought he could run as like this ultra conservative ideologue, like Tea Party guy. And I think when you really hear what a lot of Trump people are saying and you read what a lot of Trump people are saying, I don't know that they really even agree with like ultra conservative ideology.
No,
because I think the ultra conservative ideology of being the federal government's evil, you don't have a single problem the federal government can help you out on, I don't know that they really believe that. And I think that the reaction he got on the campaign trail was always really revealing. You know, Trump's talking about building a wall, and he's talking about kicking out Mexicans, and he's talking about banning Muslims, and he's talking about, like, I mean, it's all federal power. It's all, like, he's going to really, like, whoop ass. And Ted Cruz is like, and I'm going to say no to everything. It was all about dismantling the federal government and getting rid of this, saying no to that, vetoing this. And I think that the contrast was that Trump looks like this big-ass bully. It's like, he just looks like some guy at a bar beating people up. I mean, he looks like an action hero, and Ted Cruz just looks like anti-action, basically. Like, he just looks like somebody whose whole platform is like, I want to get rid of this and do nothing. And I just think that really shows you Trump versus Cruz. It exposed the lie that Republicans have ever really wanted a small federal government. I don't think they've ever really wanted that. And I think when you look at Republicans and what their actual platform is, we have to build up the military. We have to go to war with the Middle East. We have to, like, stop immigration. We have to always back the police over the civilian. A cop could literally say, hey, what's your name? John, and he shoots you, and it's like, oh, we're for the cop. I mean, it doesn't matter what a cop does. They're always for the cop in these police shootings. I read an article about this. Like, people say, why is Bernie's revolution, why did it fail and Trump succeed? And I think it's Trump. He saw that the Republicans needed the revolution, and he was smart enough to see that the Republican establishment and the voters were so far apart on so many issues that it was easy to drop that wedge and be like, they don't want no federal government, and they don't want to dismantle the federal government. They're pro-military. They're pro-getting rid of abortion, and they're pro-banning gay marriage, and they're pro-kicking out immigrants, and they're pro-police. These are all big government. I just think he was smart enough to see that as much as they talk and talk and talk about the federal government, they just want to use the federal government for different things. But I don't think either party really wants a small government. I think that's a lie, and I think Ted Cruz and all these ideologues, they've been dumb enough to believe that lie.
Yeah, it's absolutely a lie. They talk about smaller government. No, they're talking about getting rid of the parts of the government that they don't like and adding parts that they do like. So here are some of these Republican candidates. You would think that the United States military has 12 people in it. It's at the smallest levels it's been since World War II.
Right,
okay?
Right.
It's still the largest in the world. I think China has more men in the army, but as our military as a whole, including, you know, all the branches.
I think, man, how military people can even listen to the Republican Party and vote for them. Exactly what you're saying about where it's like the military has nobody. Yeah, like I mean, they make the military sound like it's a shack and there's like three guys in it with like old assault rifles. They make it seem like it's 1991 Soviet Union or something, like it's on the verge of collapse. Quarter of our class joined the military.
Yeah.
Pretty much half the boys we went to high school with joined the military. And I'm like, all these people, I can name cousins and family members and family that are in the military. And where are they getting it that our military has just fallen asleep at the wheel and has disappeared? I find it almost insulting to people who were in the military.
Exactly. Where I live, like all the people at Maxwell Airport Base, literally 2 miles down the road. And, like, I live around a bunch of military people.
Everything we did in Alabama was near some type. Huntsville was like Silicon Valley for defense contractors. They had all kinds of military jobs and defense contractors and personnel. Mobile has plenty of the same thing. Go to school at Auburn or whatever. Fort Benning's just about an hour away. You drive over to Columbus, there's Fort Benning. I mean, like you said, Maxwell Air Force Base. Military and surrounding private defense contractors is one of the largest industries in Alabama. This kind of is a good segue. Are there things that the Republicans, I mean, because I think there's a lot of things we would talk about that red states need to borrow or steal from blue states. There's a lot of things that they need to kind of borrow from these states. We might surprise people. There's a few things blue states might want to borrow from red states. Can you think of, I mean, I guess we'll just start the ball rolling. There's a laundry list we could say, but what's something you might like to see, like a state like Alabama copy from a blue state?
Probably the elephant in the room. That's the lottery.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But we're constantly having money issues, economic issues. Our schools are literally crumbling in some cases. I know when I was in high school, I was scared to walk up the stairs in one of our buildings because I was afraid they were going to collapse at any time.
Our high school had a bat problem. The roof had bats in it, and the bats would shit shit so much that the ceiling was about to leak through with bat shit. Top floor were some of the classrooms. They said, yeah, it could be toxic from bat shit, and if the bat shit starts leaking through, we're going to have to evacuate this. And it's like something out of fucking Ghostbusters. Well, like there's slime dripping. And I thought, now, if you got a high school building, you might have to close it down because of a bat shit problem. I mean, this is like, what is this, Guatemala? Where is this school built at? Definitely education. I think the divide, there's a big divide in the way blue states and red states live. When you look at the 10 states that are the most wealthy, they're almost all blue states. And when you look at the 10 states that are the most educated, they're almost all blue states. The 10 states with the least violent crime, they're almost all blue states. Child mortality rates and all these things. And then conversely, the same is true. When you go to the states that have the most gun crime, the states that are the most violent, and the states that are the least educated, the states that are poverty-stricken, really the overall standard of living. Alabama has the third lowest standard of living of any state. So it's 48, which is not great. I mean,
not great. That's the state motto.
But the state motto is, at least we're not Mississippi. But I mean, again, like as I said a few minutes ago, there are signs of encouragement. There are signs of improvement. The weird thing about Alabama is that it has a lot more potential than a lot of states that are higher than it is. Like a lot of states that have their ranking, they're stuck. A state like Alabama has a lot of potential. Top is like Huntsville, and they have all those military jobs and all the defense contractor jobs. You move down a little bit to Birmingham. Birmingham could grow. It could eventually be the next Atlanta if people were allowed to take the shackles off of it. Montgomery and Mobile and Auburn and Tuscaloosa. So there's college towns. There's medical research firms in Birmingham. There's positive signs, as well as a lot of natural resources. There's a lot of beautiful lakes, mountains, and the state could be very clean if we wouldn't pollute so much. Then you get down to the beach. A lot of states don't have a beach. Alabama has a tiny beach. It's got things going for it, and it's got a lot of things that it could do, and it could really turn things around. And I think it's just this political leadership that's got it trapped. Like with education, usually the solution to education that you have the Republicans is to basically get rid of it. Like they're like, well, public education doesn't work. We need to put in charter schools. And we need to have like all these charter schools, and we need to have private schools, and we need to give school vouchers so kids can get to private schools. I mean, the education is just completely not a priority, and I think it's safe to say that it's pretty much at the bottom of the list when it comes to priorities.
Yeah, I would say that too.
There's a really strong correlation between states that have a high standard of living and states that have a good education system. They're almost exactly the same, and I think when you look at the states that have a low standard of living, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, Alabama, you know, all the usual suspects, the education systems are almost always at the bottom too, that they have to prioritize it and they have to spend more money on it. And usually whenever the legislature in Alabama has an idea for education, it's how to break up the teachers' unions. It's more on the end of like, how do we cut teacher pay? How do we cut teacher benefits? How do we break up teachers' unions? And they usually will say something about, well, the more we break up the unions for the teachers, the better the education system will be. And I'm like, but if that's true, then why is a state like Minnesota at the top of education, and they have unionized teachers? The states that have really good education systems, almost all of them have an education union. I'm not really seeing how the teachers union is why Alabama's education system's not better.
They look at teaching and the education department is just good government. And when you've adopted the theory that government is bad and we want to be able to drown the government in a bathtub, get education, you're like, oh, you know, we have failing schools. It's clearly because we have a big government, so we need to just get rid of the big government. It's not we should modify our education system. We should look at doing things differently. We should look at changing the way we're teaching. We should invest more in education and reduce the number of students in the classroom so a middle school teacher doesn't have 30 students in a classroom possible to handle, rather than making investments to try to improve it. No, we're just going to cut it. And that's the thing. They just look at it as, they almost look at it as economists, like, well, there's no economic incentive to it, so let's just get rid of it.
So my mom's been a teacher for decades. I mean, she's been a teacher forever. And she can remember a time before there was a teacher's union. And when she first started teaching, they didn't have one. And she said, the first couple of years I taught school, I mean, I was eligible for food stamps. The wages were so bad. So I remember a time before there was a union and the school systems weren't any better. You know, I remember like before the union, Alabama was still 48th out of 50. I mean, it wasn't like we had a great school system and they ran it to the ground. We had a bad school system. All the teacher's unions really just helped the teacher pay so that, and I mean, it's still not like Alabama teachers are rich. It's still not like they make that much money, I mean, especially compared to other states. When the governor of Wisconsin, when he was trying to drive down the Wisconsin teachers, drive down their wages, he used southern states as an example where he goes, well, teachers in Wisconsin, they already make more than teachers in the South. And I see Republicans hear that, and they think we need to drive Wisconsin wages down. I hear that, think we need to drive Alabama wages up. We need to bring Alabama out of the low end of the wage pool. And he's thinking, no, we need to try to match Mississippi's teacher pay. And for people that may not know what you're referring to with the lottery a minute ago, Alabama is one of the only states in America that doesn't sell lottery tickets. Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about red states and blue states and getting into the differences, Alabama's finally going to vote. Had a vote, I mean, it was almost 20 years ago. Our last Democratic governor, Don Siegelman, he wanted the lottery. Not only did we not get a lottery, he got thrown in jail for his efforts. And they had all these articles this week saying he gave an interview and they put him in solitary confinement. Every time he gives an interview, he just happens to wind up in solitary confinement. They might understand that, like, the last time we even voted on the lottery, the guy who was wanting it, Don Siegelman, got put in jail. So this time, I think, because the Republicans want it, it'll pass. But, I mean, this is 20 years of wasted revenue that has gone by, pretty much. I mean, we could have had this, like, been like, we've lost all this revenue in this time period. And I just think it's so interesting that in November, we're going to vote on whether or not to be the last state to sell lottery tickets. And, like, California's voting on whether to legalize marijuana. So it's like, states are voting on whether to allow assisted suicide. States are voting on whether to legalize marijuana. States are voting on whether to allow, like, all these things. And Alabama's voting on, should we sell lottery tickets? And, I mean, I just think it's just interesting where the bar is. You get so, I mean, it's so different. Another thing I'd like to see us borrow from blue states is not only legalizing marijuana, but Alabama does not even have medical marijuana. Medical marijuana ought to be nationwide tomorrow. Frankly, the only reason we still have it illegal is for the seizures, and because we can make more money because it's illegal.
Yeah, and the ironic part about that is you hear people constantly complaining about prison overcrowding. In Alabama, we're about this legislature just approved Governor Bentley's plan to rebuild jails and prisons because, you know, they're falling apart. And why are we having to do that? Because we're shoving too many people in prison for things like marijuana possession, things that really they don't need to be in prison for.
And Alabama has a very high crime rate compared to a lot of blue states. Alabama's got one of the highest crime rates. West Birmingham is about the third most violent city in America. They have a high violent crime rate. Oh, I think only Louisiana has a higher violent crime rate, so there's a disproportionate amount of murders and armed robberies and rapes, which is tied to the economy, I think. I mean, it's not a coincidence that, like, Louisiana and Alabama, states that have a bad economy, they've also got a high violent crime rate. I think when we're getting into, like, what states can change, a lot of people I've met who they deal with the law, they're lawyers, they talk about Alabama's court system, and they say, yeah, it's just throw the book at you.
Yeah.
And you go in there for any little crime, any little thing or whatever, and red states, they pride themselves on being tough on crime. I think a lot of people go to jail that shouldn't be in jail, and they go to jail way too long. Sentencing's too long. In a state that's a little bit more liberal or whatever, I don't think that they have that same, like some blue states they don't have. The death penalty's not legal, all these different things. And I remember in Texas, when Rick Perry was running for president, they said, you've executed more people than any governor in American history, and the Republican crowd collapsed. They applauded. And yet on the Democratic side, they had a guy who was on death row and was declared innocent. He confronted Hillary about being for the death penalty. Democratic side, it's almost like if a Democrat is pro-death penalty, they almost have to whisper it. On the Republican side, I personally killed 300 people with my bare hands. Yeah! You know, and they'll throw a beer can. I mean, when they clapped for Rick Perry, I thought that might have been at a fucking monster truck rally or something. Like, I kind of felt disgusted that they would applaud that and really cheer for that.
The same thing is when Donald Trump mentioned that he could kill somebody, you know, in the middle of New York and his approval ratings would go up. Because, I mean, that it's so weird how a lot of Republicans are.
There's a machismo thing going on. I mean, I feel like they just want to be the 80s action hero. They want to be the Clint Eastwood, the Dirty Harry, the Death Wish. They want to be that vigilante who cleans up the town. I spent time around people in Alabama that have a lot of guns. I mean, like, there was one guy I met, and it was like a ludicrous amount of guns. It was dozens. I don't even want to guess, but I know it was over 50. And when I went to his house, I mean, I'm looking around, and he's got nothing valuable. He's Like, he's got these guns. And I'm like, what do you have all these guns for? And he's like, well, if somebody breaks into my house, I'm going to be ready for them. And then I'm like, yeah, but the only reason somebody would break in is to steal these guns. Like, this place is a shithole. You know, you don't have anything else. It's worth $5. And his house eventually got broken into because people stole the guns. And I'm like, the only reason they wanted to get in here was to steal your guns collection. But before that period, I mean, he was like, yeah, if somebody breaks in, I'm going to be ready. And but the way he said it, it's like he wanted somebody to break in. It's like he really was hoping. Yeah. He wanted the John McClane, the Die Hard, the Dirty Harry. He wanted to be the hero of his own action movie, The Rambo, with George Zimmerman, Florida security guard who shot Trayvon Martin. When you listen to that recording and you know what you know about George Zimmerman, I think it's that same thing. It's guys, they want to be in a bad situation. They want something to happen and they want to be the action hero. And I think a lot of the Republican Party is living in that mentality. I've met people that are like survivalists and what some people call preppers. They're prepping for the end of the world. It's kind of like they want it to happen. Like, it's not just that they're preparing, it's that they're kind of hoping in a way. Like, they really want to get bad and they'll be ready for it. I think it's a little dangerous that, like, so many people in America, they, when they poll Republicans, they said that, like, something like a quarter of Republicans think that, like, in their lifetimes will be end times. And I'm like, when you've got a quarter of a political party that they've got one foot in the end times, I'm like, that seems like it seems a little like they're going against governing at that point, because when you get a quarter of being like, well, what's the point? World's going to shit. Like, it might get in the way of governing effective. That's what we're seeing in some, not all, but some Republican governors and congressmen, and they just don't feel like there's anything the government should be doing, and there's not, they feel like the government is completely impotent and they can't help anything. Yeah. They just stuff worse, and they don't even try to do anything. Their whole thing is that they shouldn't do anything.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So I think we'll transition a little bit to blue states. I just think it's so interesting because, I mean, I moved from Alabama to New York, which in a way is its own immigrant tale. I mean, it's all America, but it feels pretty different. But I think guns is one of those things that people, they really, really don't understand. In Alabama, like, if a politician were to even mention something about a gun control law, you're going to create a run on the gun stores.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have a line up the gun stores of people buying. Every time Obama has even said the word gun in a speech, it just makes the gun company stocks go through the roof. In red states, people, they're just more comfortable with guns. They have a culture of guns, and guns are around them all the time. And in blue states, there's almost a paranoia about guns. Like, they're almost too far on the other side where, in New York or whatever, if I went on a date with somebody, and this was in Manhattan. This was not like upper New York where they hunt squirrels or some shit. This was like the city. This was Manhattan. So, I mean, like, there'd be a girl, and if I said something about, like, I owned a gun or whatever, I used to have one before I moved here, and they'd be like, why? Who did you kill with it? And I'm like, I didn't kill anybody. Like, I just, in their minds, it was like, if you had a gun, it was because you wanted to kill somebody. Like, it was because you bought that gun specifically to murder somebody. But I think in Alabama, like, if you even mention something about a gun control law, people go nuts. And in Manhattan, if you mentioned that you had a gun, people would go nuts. It was so different how they viewed it. And also in Manhattan, I mean, if you told somebody, well, I was shot in Alabama, they'd be like, I'm not surprised. Those lawless, you know, and I'm like, yeah. And then I went and I bought a gun or whatever. Like, why? So they don't even understand, like, a need to protect yourself. And this is not everybody. I mean, there's people who do understand. Bloomberg at that time was the mayor, and there was a lot of couldn't smoke in public, which I kind of like because I'm not a smoker. I mean, I know some people said that's big government, that's nanny state. Well, good, because I hate cigarette smoke. And there was a lot of things about guns, and I mean, but even something like soda. I'm like, when you get to the point where, like, food is a political issue, but it is. You're looking at it to where, like, in Alabama, people, they resent any kind of government regulation about food. Like, they really, it really pisses them off. And yet it's the fattest state in America. I mean, it's the second fattest state in America. Like, Mississippi is the fattest. I think Alabama is the second fattest. And they really need to change their diet. But any mention about that or whatever, they hate it. It drives them nuts. But then in Manhattan, Bloomberg tried to pass it to where if you bought a Big Gulp, it was a, like, misdemeanor or something. You know, like, it was against the law to buy, like, a jumbo soda. And I'm like, you could buy two separate cups of soda, but if you bought them all in the same. And I thought, that's something that, like, blue states, a soda law is not going to really do anything. But then in the red states, having it be like, well, you can freebase a donut. And Bama, there's 20 fucking, I mean, the town we come from is not that big, but there's a dozen places you can buy fried chicken. I mean, I don't think there's a restaurant there that doesn't serve, the fucking pizza place that serve fried chicken. So it's like, you thinking freebase fried chicken, but then if you go up to New York, Bloomer's like, soda? I don't think so, you know? So I just think that like, that's one of those things that maybe they could swap positions or meet in the middle.
Yeah, they definitely need to at least meet in the middle. Yeah. You look at Alabama, it's like we have the worst diet in the country, and we also have some of the highest healthcare costs. I wonder if there's a correlation there.
There could be. There could a separate example. People might think about New York and California, and they think about the coast, the East Coast, the West Coast. But then I lived in Minnesota, which is not really a coast, but it's definitely a blue state. Minnesota's probably the bluest state that doesn't have a coastline. And people there are real health conscious. There's a lot of very, very white, probably the whitest place I've ever seen in my life. There's a lot of blondes, and there's a lot of health conscious people. And I'd go out, and they got like 10,000 lakes. They always going on about their damn lakes. But you see people run around the lakes, and I'm like, this looks like fucking Hitler Youth. You see like a blonde couple that look like they could be brother and sister, and they're running around a lake like in really good shape. And I'm like, damn, this is like some, let me know when the Adolf rally is about to start. So, but they're in really good shape. And I went to a doctor and just to even mention the word the South, and it was like a 30-minute lecture about the sedentary lifestyle and the fried foods. And the, so I think it's just interesting that even when you get into regions of the country, food matters, and food is political, and food is cultural, and it's really cultural. And even though this is all part of America, so much as mentioning you could lose some weight or whatever, and you're in Minnesota and you say you're from the South, it's going to start like a whole dialogue,
yeah,
a whole thing about fried foods. And that Minnesota's not so healthy either. They get a lot of carbs and a lot of bread and a lot of cheese. It's just that it doesn't have any taste. It kind of tastes like shit. They found a way to make really bad for you food have no taste, which is amazing. But and then, of course, L.A. is very fitness conscious. It's even more so. In L.A., like, see, in Alabama, you can't even buy alcohol on Sundays. And then in L.A., they might pass, like, a gluten ban. I'll see somebody, they'll tell me about, like, a food allergy that doesn't even make sense. I mean, they'll be like, it turns out I'm allergic to anything over 10 calories. I can't eat anything besides chewing gum and peppermints. I mean, they'll have some fucking food allergy that they made up, clearly. And yet, they'll say this in between cigarettes and drinks. So they'll be smoking out of one hand and have gluten's terrible for me, and they're drinking alcohol, and I'm like, well, you probably shouldn't be like down in alcohol like you are. No, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then in Alabama, they either don't drink at all or they're full-blown alcoholics. Like, there's not a lot of casual drinking, not a lot of like people who have like one a day or whatever. They're either like they never drink, and even saying the word beer, they go to church and pray about it, or they like sit in a trailer all day and pass out drunk.
There's
no in between.
There really isn't. You're spot on.
Isn't that interesting, though, that like Alabama has really no gun control laws, and they have a lot of violent crime, and then a state that's north, they have very, very low violent crime, but they're completely paranoid about guns. Do you think maybe they should swap positions a little bit?
I wish they would. It would be logical to, but I mean, again, like you said, like I can never picture Alabama where they have strict gun laws.
Just like the Southeast, they seceded over slavery. I think the only thing that could get them to do that again would be a federal gun control law about no guns. Like, you try to take all their guns away, that'd be the only thing that they would be like shit about.
Absolutely agree.
I think they'll put up with gay marriage. I think they'll put up with abortion. I think they'll put up with a lot of things that they don't want, that they have to take the population of Guadalajara. They have to let them move to Alabama and they'll put up with anything. But I think if you try to take their guns away, they will rebel, literally.
Yeah, they will.
I mean, it is really important to people. Like, we'll have a whole other episode about guns, but a lot of people think I'm too lenient about guns and I don't care about them enough. I kind of wish the Democratic Party would quit talking about them, because I know people in the red states, they go apeshit about guns. I mean, they love them. Nothing turns moderate or an independent in the South to a Republican like the issue about guns. That just, they completely will not vote for a Democrat who's, and I kind of wish we would just quit talking about it, because I know that we're not ever going to get anything done. 72% can want anything, but if you're talking about the people who actually vote and vote in the South or whatever, it's never going. I mean, quit talking about this, because it's a waste of time, and all it does is it costs a lot of like Democrats and red states their seats, and then it really makes it impossible to do anything else.
Yeah, that's what I had somebody ask me. I feel like I know your stance on about every issue, because between social media, your blog, talking with you, I feel like I know everything, but I don't think I've ever asked you about guns. Like, what's your stance on guns? And I was like, you don't know it because I don't talk about it, because it's not an issue that it's changed. Like, regardless of how I feel about guns, nothing is ever going to change. So it's not even something I'm going to talk about.
There are people who live in Manhattan and L.A. and they've barely ever seen a gun in their whole lives. And even if you mentioned something about you owned one or whatever, I mean, like, they're just paranoid about it. And it's one of those things that really freaks them out. When the Clintons passed that crime bill, one of the big things that they really wanted was an assault weapons ban. And they got it. That was the only real piece of, major piece of gun legislation we've had in a long time, was that assault weapons ban. It cost a lot of Democrats their seats. It made the Republican Party go apeshit. And the second George W. Bush retook the White House, he let the assault weapons ban expire. And now what's happened 20 years later, every Bernie fan point out the evils of the crime bill, and they talk about it like it's the worst thing that ever happened, and it single-handedly created. They act like there was some law in that crime bill that said, okay, police to go out and find black men and kill them. That, that specifically mentioned in the bill.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that was the only piece of gun legislation, major, we've seen, and it cost Democrats a ton, and the people who were in charge of it or whatever, they're demonized for that bill, and nobody even mentioned the assault weapons ban that was in it. I never even heard that it was in the bill. I think if a future president saw that and what happened to Bill and Hillary, and they would look at that and think, it's not worth it. It's going to make moderate hillbillies who live in a bunker and they don't even vote, it's going to drive them like mad to go vote for Trump. People, when it comes to guns, they say it brings people out of the woodwork. I mean that literally. People will come out of the hills to vote about guns.
Yeah.
If they see that it drives rural people crazy, it costs Democrats in red and purple states, and even 10 years later, the so-called progressive wing of the party, the Bernie people, they don't even remember it. Like, it doesn't even matter to them when it comes to social issues. With pretty much most of the southern states and most of the red states, really any state that has a Republican governor, they've tried as hard as they can to, like, get rid of abortion clinics. And they're trying harder and harder to, like, get rid of any abortion clinic in America.
Yeah.
At the same time, you look at a state like Alabama, the second highest teen pregnancy rate in America, the second highest out of wet. I mean, basically, when we talk about Alabama, if it weren't for Mississippi, we talked about obesity, and Mississippi's the fastest, Alabama's the second fastest. When we talk about teen pregnancy and talk about unexpected pregnancies and out of wedlock pregnancies and accidental pregnancies, mothers who don't have, this is all the red states that have tried as hard as they can to limit access to contraceptives and to teach abstinence-only education, to get rid of abortion clinics. The states who really don't need to adopt this socially strict attitude are the ones who do, and it's hurting them. In terms of the blue states, people may have gone, I'm not going to say, because I mean, abortion, that ought to be legal, 100% legal, no exceptions. I mean, anybody who wants one ought to have it. But I think the social attitudes in a place like Manhattan, I mean, I only speak for myself, but I know, like, when I lived there, I mean, you talk to people and they'd be like, I'm too young to get married. I'm only 50. You know, people who, like, they think they've got forever. I mean, you talk to a woman that was 55 and she's like, I think I'll settle down when I meet the right guy. And I'm like, the right guy's going to be eligible for Social Security. Alabama, they get married too quick. They have kids too quick. They kind of do a lot of things. I mean, the teen pregnancy rate is astronomical. I mean, I'm about to turn 30. Most people we know, they've only been married once. They've been married twice and maybe divorced. Maybe some of them are on their third marriage.
Second, third, fourth kid.
Yeah. So I think the social attitudes, I mean, obviously in Alabama, things are too accelerated and people, they get married too young. They have kids too young. They make a lot of mistakes. But I think in Manhattan, like, I mean, it's completely common and accepted to meet a guy who's in his mid-50s and he really thinks that, like, that he's got forever. I think if you had a guy who was 60 years old in Alabama and he's like, I'm too young to get married, people would burst out laughing.
Yeah.
Like, they would just, like, not even entertain somebody who thought that way.
No, they would. They'd be laughed at.
Pregnancy rates in Alabama, they're not ideal. In a lot of your blue states and in a lot of your northeastern states, the pregnancy rates they're almost too low because a lot of them are saying that, like, the populations are getting too old and you're having, like, a lot of the states that do have unions and do have pensions in the northeast, there's too many people going into the pension systems and the retirement systems and there's too few people replacing them, basically.
Yeah.
So, like, you might have 3 or 4 retirees to one person who's currently working. The populations are getting older, they're getting grayer. Do you think maybe, like, in Alabama we don't plan enough for families and future and we're not on top of sexual health? And maybe in, like, Northeast they're almost too reticent, like they almost are too hesitant moving to that stage?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when you're talking about family planning and it's not that we don't do it at all.
Here's the family planning. You're pregnant? Shit. And they're just like, I thought you said you took some birth control. That was a pack of Skittles. I told you that 15 times. Your birth control in Alabama is like, I took Mentos. They're like, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I know this is anecdotal, but I would talk to so many women in Alabama that they've never been on birth control and they didn't know anything about it. Like, I mean, I'm sitting there like, I'm a man and I know more about birth control than you. I mean, it felt weird that I was telling them about birth control and they go, well, I heard that it makes you fat. I'm like, yeah, well, you've never taken it. You've never used it. You don't know anything about it. You've never asked a doctor about it. And a lot of the doctors don't want to talk about it, and they don't bring it up. It's all kind of interconnected. I mean, the education system fails people. And then when they get older, Alabama's a right-to-work state. If we're talking about things we'd like to change, Alabama's a right-to-work state, which is terrible. I mean, it basically means you have no rights when you go to work. So there's almost no unions. There's almost no retirement system. If you are on the job and your hand gets cut off, well, why was your hand in the way of that buzzsaw? There's
You're fired.
Well, that's a tough break. Pick up your hand and get out. You're fired. I mean, clean that blood off your face and get out of here. So one time, I mean, I had a shitty job at a grocery store as a grocery bagger. I was 15, and they asked me to go out to the parking lot, fix one of the lights, and I got electrocuted. Because, again, I was 15. I had no fucking business going out, standing on the ladder and, like, trying to put the light back. I mean, it was a loose wire. I mean, I didn't have electrical experience. And I got electrocuted, and I remember going back inside the store, and the assistant manager's the manager of the cashier. She was there, and she was like, are you going to sue us? And I was like, no, I just thought I would tell you I got electrocuted. And they go, get back to work. I mean, the second I said I wasn't going to sue, it was get back to work. And I thought maybe they might give me a sandwich or something. I thought, you get electrocuted, maybe they give you a sandwich if you're at a grocery store that you work at. No, I mean, they didn't ask me to take a break. They said, get back to work. Some of the jobs I had were kind of cruel, really, the way that they treated people. In Alabama, the minimum wage is going to be $7.25, and in California, they're talking about raising it to $15 an hour. I think they should swap. So for California, I think the taxes are really too high, the state taxes. And some of the local taxes and the cost of living, pricing. I think a $15 minimum wage is going to do nothing but increase inflation. Like, I think you're going to, like, the rent is already high, the food is already high, everything is already too high, and I think that's just going to make it go up further. And I think a place like Alabama that needs the economic infusion, I mean, this is what we're saying, where they should swap, where you have a state that's really poor. It might could really need that cash infusion of a $15 an hour minimum wage, because that might be the one thing that could really pull its economy out of the swamp. And in a state like California, where inflation and pricing and cost of living is already too high, it's just going to make it worse. That's something that you might should see red states and blue states swap, is the overall way that they think about wages and the way that they think about taxes. I think that they should absolutely swap the way that they think about it.
That's an example I haven't ever considered or thought about, but yeah.
I think if they swapped some of their economic philosophies, and I mean everything, because a lot of what the blue states do, it clearly works, because the education system is better, the standard of living is better, the infrastructure is better, a lot of what they do works, but I just think that, like, in general, when you talk about places that could probably lower their taxes, I mean, New Jersey comes to mind, a lot of blue states come to mind, and you talk about places that their tax system is too low to sustain their population, kind of like Alabama's, you got to be at the top of the list. Coincidence that a lot of states that have really bad education systems also have really low tax structures, like, they're pretty directly related.
You know, which ties back to me saying we needed a lottery, so can our tax they're too low. We don't have enough money, so we got to get some money somewhere.
Any other issues you think red states and blue states that they could swap out on?
I don't know about swapping. I think that red states, you kind of touched on this, red states should look at investing more on infrastructure, something that red states have really dropped the ball on. And you're talking about why major Fortune 500 companies aren't wanting to come to a state like Alabama, because we don't have the infrastructure there in place. We don't have, you may get one company to Birmingham, but at the same time, you know, why is the company going to pick up and leave one state to come to Alabama?
I think you brought up a great point. In Minnesota, one reason I lived in Minneapolis is because they have a disproportionate amount of Fortune 500 companies. Like, you have Best Buy is based there, Target is based there, Cargill is based there. They have several Fortune 500 companies. And you look at a state like Minnesota and you think, what the fuck? I mean, this is in the middle of nowhere. Like, there's not like a major, it's inconvenient because it's not near any type of a coastline. The nearest true mega city is Chicago, which is 7 hours away, and like in every single direction, there's nothing around it. I mean, you got Canada, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, Iowa. It's really an inconvenient place to base all these Fortune 500 companies out of, especially because these are international companies. So when you want like a cool businessman from Tokyo, be like, hey man, come to Minneapolis, we'll party. It's like, what? So I mean, you're not going to woo like a Hong Kong corporation to be like, you know what, St. Paul, that's where I need to be at. It's a really inconvenient place to base all this stuff out of, and the only reason reason is because of there's a tax package that they like. Alabama, they borrowed the tax philosophy out of that, but they forgot the part about education, infrastructure. They borrowed the stuff that the businesses like the taxes, but they've also got an education system that can put new employees there. They've also got infrastructure that downtown Minneapolis, they have a skyway system where like all the skyscrapers are basically connected by like a series of above ground sky tunnels. And I'm just sitting there thinking like, if you try to do something like that in Birmingham, it would take you 100 years. I mean, they don't have the capabilities. Now this is that Minnesota, Scandinavian, German engineering thing that they got going on. But I mean, it's like a dang city of the future when you go there, and you have like these interconnected tunnels along the downtown area. Mobile, they tried to build a new road system and it almost bankrupted the government. You know, I mean, it was just, the Birmingham mayor went to jail because of he tried to pave a road or something, and he like, oh, $10 billion went missing, and it's like, what? We're just going to put a new roof on the hospital. Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things like that where they've taken that business philosophy of a favorable tax system, but if you don't have the other stuff around it, it's going to be really hard to woo anybody. You can get a zero tax rate in Birmingham, but if you build it there and it's damn near impossible to recruit people to come there, and you can't draw from the local population because they're at such a far educational advantage, businesses have to look at not just taxes, but what is the local population that we can draw talent from, and can we get people from other places to come there? In a state like Alabama, the social laws, the anti-gay marriage, it's really hard to recruit people from California and New York, top talent to come there because of that. And it's also hard to draw because the schools in Alabama have failed kids 18 ways. I mean, in the public school in Birmingham, if you tried to show that, like if you tried to give them a tech class, they'd be like, okay, so a computer, how do you turn one on? And I think they're at such a far technological disadvantage, you don't even have a local population you can draw talent from. It's tough. One thing that we'll briefly touch before we leave is immigration. I think it's kind of hilarious that like a state like Alabama has the strictest immigration law in America. I mean, we're from an area that had I have nothing against like illegal immigrants at all, but we did have a big illegal immigrant population because it was like six different chicken plants, basically. You saw a big increase in like a decade's time period. I mean, it went from a town that had barely 5% Hispanic population to one that had almost a third Hispanic population. I mean, it was a big jump. But I think Alabama, if you took every undocumented worker or illegal immigrant, whatever you want to call it, and every single one of them, I think it wouldn't even be like 5% of California's, be anywhere near what California has. And get in a state like California, when you talk about like illegal immigrants or whatever, they don't care. Like they completely don't care, and it's not a priority. And they're like, oh, the entire state of Baja could empty out and it wouldn't bother us. In a state like Alabama, it's like, oh, a guy named Jose moved here, get him. I mean, their standards are just so weird about that issue, to where it's like a state that should care about it doesn't care about it, and a state that it's not really even a problem. I mean, when they have states that are voting for Trump, like Indiana, they ask them like, oh, immigration, and I'm like, what's in the Indiana's Hispanic population, 5 people. When Vermont went for Trump, I'm like, Vermont? They're worried about immigration? Nobody, even people who are born in Vermont don't want to fucking live there. Like, people who are born in Vermont, they move south. I mean, immigrant population in Vermont is like 50-year-old people leaving who, like, oh, it's too cold and my joints hurt. I'm moving to Alabama. I just thought it was interesting that, like, states who had no real immigrant problem were the ones who were the most worried about it. And then states on the West Coast and obviously New York, and, I mean, they don't care at all. The whole thing about terrorism and ISIS and Islam, I thought that was like, I mean, you'll have a state like Alabama that thinks that ISIS is camped out in the Walmart parking lot, you know, like they're going to start beheading people at Dollar General or something. Like, ISIS is going to blow up their favorite barbecue restaurant, and you'll have red states that are completely not targeted by terrorist groups because none of the people live there. Like, they don't care about Iowa. I live in Los Angeles, and if you ask people where terrorism is on their priorities list, it wouldn't be in the top 50, and yet every major terrorist group from Al-Qaeda to ISIS has said they want to hit L.A.
Yeah.
And if you ask people, like, how worried are you about terrorism? None. And then, like, right behind them, the dang Long Beach Harbor could blow up or something. And then in Alabama, it's like, I'm very worried about it. I remember when we went to high school, people had, right after 9/11, they had security at our high school football games because they're like, well, you never know. Al-Qaeda, they took high school football games a great target. And I'm like, oh, it's a high school football game in the middle of nowhere. It's not a great, like, Bin Laden's like, okay, first the World Trade Center. Then the high school football game in Bumblefuck. Like, I mean, that's not his master plan, is to start hitting the high school football games, and like they're real worried about it. California doesn't seem to be worried about it at all, and it's kind of, I think that's something they should definitely swap, is just states that, and then when I lived in Minneapolis, they have a huge Somalian population, and at that time, the Al-Shabaab terrorist network in Somalia, they were asking Somalians in Minneapolis to go to the Mall of America and kill people, and it didn't stop people from going. That, like, there's like people were like, you know what? I want one of those pretzels. They still were going to the mall. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.wordpress.com.
Join us next week. All right, thanks, everybody.